I think a lot of people talk about getting to success, but not a lot of people talk about being okay with being successful. And what I mean by that is, especially for us Black and brown folk, some of us may come from backgrounds that weren't the most advantageous, right? And so when you make it, quote unquote, make it, you can have this guilt of like, man, why me? Why was this opportunity given to me? And I had that. I struggled with it. I would look back home and see my family and realize that I'm having experiences that they may not have. But then I kind of tried to flip that concept in my head and start thinking, well, okay, you're getting this opportunity, but what are you going to do with it? What are you going to show people?
Hey friends, hey, I hope you're all well, and we are back with another inspiring conversation with entertainment attorney Thomas Russell. Thomas is my new friend, and I am grateful for it. His story is just another, just very inspiring story, and he's an inspiring human all around. His story is about grit. It is about resilience. It is about dreaming. It's about chasing your dreams relentlessly. And we talk about the pivots. We talk about the setbacks. We talk about the joy. And I just left the conversation feeling really motivated. So before we get to our conversation, I want to tell you a bit more about Thomas. So Thomas Russell III, he is a corporate counsel at Amazon Music, where he advises the tech giant on its live streaming, video on demand, and sponsorship efforts. And for the past two seasons, Thomas led artist and music label negotiations for Amazon Music Live, a first of its kind weekly live stream concert series following the Thursday night football game, featuring performances by some of my favorite, Ed Sheeran, Meg Thee Stallion, Lil Wayne, Kane Brown, and more. And this year, Thomas also advised Amazon in connection with NBA Con, and Thomas was recognized by Variety as one of the top in-house entertainment attorneys for 2023. He is also committed to championing issues for the BIPOC community. So prior to joining Amazon Music, Thomas represented Post 21, a Black-owned online marketplace, in its deal with Disney, making it the first Black-owned operating partner in downtown Disney. Yes, a big deal. He also worked on GTG Entertainment and the development of the 2023 Sports Emmy-winning documentary series 38 at the Garden, and the Bernard and Shirley Kinsey Foundation for Art and Education in the extension of its Trailblazing Art exhibition, which is currently on display at SoFi Stadium in LA. So if you're in LA, check it out. And Thomas is also a member of the Kinsey Foundation's board of directors. He went to Ursinus College in Pennsylvania and Howard University for law school. And when he's not working, you can find him spending quality time with his wife, Ashley, and two sons, Thomas and Carter. And we learn all about his family life in this conversation, all about his career, about his purpose. And I can't wait for you all to hear this conversation. So let's get to it. All right. I'm so excited to have you, Thomas, on the podcast. I already feel like you're family because we have so many mutual connections. So thank you so much for just coming on the show and being willing to share your story.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Ashley.
Absolutely. So, yes, we met at a dinner with our mutual partner mentor, and we started chatting, and then we realized that you know all the people I grew up with, all of my friends, friends who have been on the shows. Shout out to Spencer Paysinger, who was one of my first guests. And you are married to Ashley, who's also, same name, also went to law school. You guys met in law school. And her brother was like my big brother in high school. So all the connections.
Yeah, this was bound to happen.
Yeah. So yeah, I know a little bit about your career, and I just want to know about the beginning. So let's get into it. Let's start with your childhood. Let's talk about your upbringing. Can you set the scene for us?
Yeah. So I'm from Wilmington, Delaware. I'm not an LA guy. Like you were saying, my wife kind of brought me to LA. The story starts in Wilmington. I was raised by my mom. She's a single mom. God bless her heart. Her name's Gladys. It was just her and I growing up from about sixth grade through high school, just the two of us figuring it out. But my mom was very much a stickler for education. So if I wasn't outside playing basketball, I was inside like reading or doing something. So she was always like pushing me to, you know, go to college, make something of myself, and stressing the importance of education. She was pretty strict too. So, you know, I was very much on it as a kid. I didn't have my father around, so you know, that kind of created a different dynamic between my mom and I, where, you know, I solely relied on her for everything. But growing up, she had the foresight to send me to this local rec center called the Police Athletic League PAL Center. I kind of spent my childhood in the PAL or with my mom. There was a lot of mentors there, police officers that kind of took to the students and the kids and, you know, tried to show us different things. But there was one officer in particular, his name was Officer Wiley, who kind of like stepped in to be like my dad in a sense. You know, he taught me everything from how to interview to how to shake a man's hand, you know, when you meet someone, to how to write a resume so that you can get an internship while you're in high school in a field that you know that you're interested in. So the PAL Center, between the PAL Center and my mom, like those were like the strongholds in my life outside of others that kind of like started me on the path of thinking like, hey, I have to figure out what I want to do next in my professional life, simply because like I grew up very humble means, you know, just me and my mom. It wasn't a lot of money. She didn't work. She had some physical and mental struggles of her own that kind of prevented her from doing those things. So like growing up, I was very independent, very self-motivated, always thinking about the next step because I just didn't see all the resources around me like some other kids that I may have grew up next to. So always was forward thinking and just trying to push it to the next level. My mom's favorite quote to me was, "Lights, camera, action, it's showtime." Basically trying to get me in the mindset of understanding that like you're going to have to present yourself, you're going to have to speak up for yourself, you're going to have to put yourself forward to get the opportunities that you may want, because no one's coming here to look for guys like you to give those opportunities to. So
Wow. Yeah. I think that I'm just a little bit more curious about your personality. So I've got the disciplined Thomas, that you were motivated, you were going to create a certain life for yourself, do well in school. Your mom's like, education is important. Tell me more about your personality and how you showed up as a child.
man, as a kid, I actually was kind of like, it came off as high confidence, but inside it didn't feel that way. I'm a firm believer now that I have children that like growing up with your father is like very important, because I feel as though that's where, as guys, that's where we get our confidence from. That's where we get our swagger from. You know, that's where we kind of learn what it means to be a man. And growing up, not having that, like, all while I pushed myself, there was some self-doubt there. There was some like, can I really do this? Can I pull off the things that I want to do? Can I go to college? Like, will I be able to afford it type thing? So like growing up, like I was very confident on the outside, but on the inside, there was some self-doubt. And my mom always would call it Doubting Thomas, like from the Bible, Doubting Thomas. But outside of that, I was very bubbly. Like I was very like a people person. Everyone on my block knew me because I will wake up and go outside and start playing basketball. And when others started coming out, I'm not afraid to introduce myself because of some of the learnings I had from the PAL. So like I was always a people's person, but like inside, like I was explaining to you, I had to figure out a way to overcome some of that doubt. And this wasn't as a kid as much, but more so like that high school age when you're starting to think about the next step. I had to overcome that. But like in high school, amongst my friends, you know, I was a normal kid. I just wanted to play with my friends, hang out with my friends, do some homework sometimes, just relax. Like I said, most of my time was spent at the PAL Center. And that's where I met like a lot of kids that, you know, I grew up with and still talk to this day.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate that honesty too, when it comes to just the self-doubt, because I think we all deal with it at some point in our life. And I know that you've had this just incredible career with lots of different pivots and some setbacks and some challenges. And so I'm curious about maybe one of those bigger setbacks that helped you perhaps get over that self-doubt or helped with some personal growth.
Yeah, no. So I think going through college, high school, college, and law school, I was an A student. So like I had never really experienced academic failure until I took the Delaware bar. I failed the Delaware bar, and this was probably like the most challenging but best moment of my professional and personal life. Because one, it was a big failure. Coming out of law school, you got this great job. You're going to be working at a law firm. It's one of the best law firms in the world. And you can't just get past a simple test. Even though the test is difficult, but you've done tests your whole life. So why should this be any different? And that's the question I kept asking myself when I failed the bar. But the reason I say it's like the best thing that happened to me, because it removed the self-doubt. And what I mean by that is it put me into a mode of, okay, I didn't pass the bar. I don't know what's going to happen next with my job because I'm not a practicing attorney now because I don't have the qualification. It put me in a mode of like, I have to figure it out and I'm going to hustle and figure out not only like the professional way to get past this bar, but at the same time, the personal demons inside, that doubt. Running into that wall made me feel as though like I have to conquer this so that way I can proceed and I can stop doubting myself. And after I didn't pass that bar, but I did move on to the DC bar, passed it, moved on to the California bar, passed that as well. But like going through that experience of failure was like the best thing that happened because it just allowed me to, there's nowhere else but up from here. Like that was my mentality. There's nowhere else but up from here. So anything you do today is only going to make tomorrow better. And in doing that work, waking up every day to study, staying up late to study, I started realizing like, hey, man, you have the tools that you need to get over some of your personal struggles and personal doubts to get what you want, you know, out of life.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And so inspiring. And also the fact that you just kept moving to these other bars. Listen, I was like, listen, I can't do all that. Let me just pass this California bar. I'm not doing it in another state. So the fact that you went on to continue to study and you become a licensed attorney in various places and you ended up practicing litigation, which is what I believe is what you wanted to do previously. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey to litigation?
Yeah. So coming out of law school, like I was a moot court guy. I was straight litigation. I'm going to get out of law school. I'm going to Delaware. I'm going to be a corporate litigator in front of the court of chancery. You know, that was the thing that I was doing. And when I came to LA, I was doing the same thing, commercial litigation, handling my cases, going to trial, things of that nature. But this is where I say, like, you think you have a plan, but God has something else. I thought I was just going to be a corporate litigator, go the partner track route, make partner and be a commercial litigator the rest of my life. But when I moved to LA, I kind of kept getting asked the question, do you do entertainment law? Do you do entertainment law? And every time I say, no, I'm a litigator. I don't do entertainment transactional work. But finally, like, I got tired of telling people no. And I realized that, like, if the world is coming to you asking you for a service, maybe they see something that you don't see. And the person that kind of helped me realize that the most was Spencer Paysinger. Spencer, seeing him make the transition from NFL to entertainment and writer, producer, I'm like, maybe I should stop saying no and see if I can dabble in this entertainment world. And that's exactly what I did. Through Spencer, I met a lot of folks and I was able to get my first client, which was Hannibal Buress. We did some great projects together on the entertainment transactional side. But I was doing this all while still doing my 9-to-5 litigation work, right? So I had like this dual practice kind of going on. And after I started working with Hannibal, others started coming through the door. And it just got to a point that I started realizing, like, I'm meant to be an entertainment attorney. I am meant to do this work. For whatever reason, I connect with the folks in this industry. I provide a service that they appreciate. And I like the work that I do. So that's kind of how the transition developed. It just started out of pure ask from others and then realizing, like, hey, like, if I really want to get out here and be a partner and do the things that I want to do, maybe I should see if my skill set can broaden some. And it did. And it broadened in a major way that I'd never anticipated happening. Like I said, I was going to be a litigator. That was it. But like God had something else for me.
Yeah. And I'm so happy that you were just open to the opportunity. Finally, you know, you did say no a few times, like many of us do.
I said no a lot.
Really?
I said no a lot. Because the last thing you want to do is take on work for someone and you don't feel like you're versed in it enough to like give them the quality that they deserve. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that as lawyers, like our job is to provide a service and they're not here for results. Well, clients are sometimes here for results, but they're here for your legal opinion. And the best thing I can do is train my mind strong enough in that specific area to provide a good legal opinion.
Yeah. And so can you tell us a little bit about that? Just how did you make that transition when it comes to from a, just like a student perspective and learning the transactional side? Because it certainly is different from litigation.
Yeah, no, it varies. It's very much different. And that's a great question. But like many things in my life, I've had to like hustle. And we have a joke in our family. We call it, we say the hustle is so Russell. And it's the truth, because in that moment, I literally was billing my hours towards litigation, like 2000 plus hours a year. At the same time, at night, working on, you know, my entertainment work, but also grabbing books, grabbing legal books to like read and study, finding other attorneys that I could like learn from and ask questions from within my firm, whether they were entertainment focused or not, just because I felt as though a lot of this is contract work. So I needed to talk to the corporate guys as well. So it was just me going out like a student again, almost, and taking books, taking information and just soaking it in and getting on as many deals as possible, whether they were my deals that I self-generated or someone else's deal, to just get that experience. And I made sure that like I didn't affect any of my like litigation work, because like at the end of the day, that's what the law firm hired me to do. But at the same time, if this was something I wanted, I have to go get it. And like I think that's like the most important thing in my story, which is if I wanted something, I had to go get it. Like no one was going to provide me anything, especially where I'm from. It's not a lot of people make it out, and those that do have to hustle. So I just kind of got back into that mode of student and just felt as though learn as much as possible. Don't be afraid to put yourself out there. And then mentally, and this was a big switch for me, mentally rebranding myself as an entertainment attorney in my head, because going out to other people, it's very easy to think you're one thing. Like, I'm a litigator, I do this. But now having to tell people I'm an entertainment attorney. And that's like a personal switch in your head to say, I'm no longer this, I am now this. And I'm going to stand on that. And I'll never forget when I made the switch, the first person I called was Spencer. And I was like, hey, man, can you meet me for some drinks? And he was like, of course. So I tell him, I was like, hey, I think I'm gonna explore this entertainment thing full time. Like, do I got your support? And he was like, of course. And from that day forward, I just my foot to the gas and push the pedal as far as I can.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, okay. So many questions.
Yeah. Keep them coming.
Yeah. So with that switch from litigation to entertainment, and you know, you said something, you said, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what I meant to do. And you connected with the people. And then things started to snowball from there. Some great opportunities. You've been able to do some excellent things in entertainment. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. The funny thing is, like you said, it snowballed. And it snowballed in a way that I didn't anticipate. After Hannibal, I worked with Blair Paysinger, who you went to high school with, and her mom on Post 21. It's a Black online marketplace that features products from Black vendors. We were able to negotiate the first deal with Downtown Disney with a Black-owned operator. So basically a Black-owned store. So we were able to put the first Black-owned store in Downtown Disney here in Anaheim, California, right outside of Disneyland, which was really cool. From there, I started working with a guy by the name of Samir Hernandez on a project called 38 at the Garden. 38 at the Garden tells the story of Jeremy Lin's historic run with the Knicks, Lin's Sanity. It is a great documentary because not only does it touch on sports and basketball, but it also touches on the life of Asian Americans here in the United States and what that Lin's Sanity moment meant for them. in a time of when they're experiencing some prejudice and racism as well. All of you watching and listening to the podcast can still go watch it on HBO Max. Samir did an amazing job with his production company, GTG Entertainment, and they were able to win a sports Emmy this year. So I've worked on some really cool projects. I also represented the Kinsey family. The Kinsey family has one of the largest collections of Black art in the country, and they have a exhibition going on right now at SoFi Stadium. It's been going on for like the past 2 years. I negotiated the extension of that deal at SoFi Stadium, and I currently sit on the Kinsey Foundation's board of directors. So I have been able to work with some really cool people on some really groundbreaking projects. And the cool part about my projects is that they focus on our community. They focus on the Black community. I always tell people when I moved to LA, LA showed me so much love. I think that's partly to do with the fact that like I had Ashley and Todd to meet, you know, and make friends through. But even in making those friends, like they didn't have to do business with me. They didn't have to do those things. So I always say like my community, especially the View Park community here in LA, like they got behind me in a major way and really pushed me to do great things. And I love the fact that it was for like my people and for us, because I always joke and say like my people in my neighborhood made me partner. That if it wasn't for those guys and gals, like it would never happen. So all these cool projects are great, but like they're a testament to not only the work that I do, but like the work that these people are doing day in and day out to grow their businesses and to provide good content to the community at large.
Yeah. Wow. I love that emphasis on community, because you've certainly, and we've all heard it, like you did the work. You did all the work required. You hustled, and it's so impressive. But with success, you need community in everything, right? You don't do anything alone. And I think it's so beautiful that you've had the Black community, the View Park community specifically, being from LA. So I just love that. And you mentioned something. You said they helped make you partner. Tell us about that, because I believe you were quite young when you made partner. I think you did that for a little bit. I looked at your LinkedIn, and I think you transitioned to corporate counsel and you're on Variety's top list. So tell us a little bit about those pivots.
Yeah, I've learned that success doesn't look like this. It's a lot of up and down and maybe some circles too.
And the listeners can't see us. So you said success is essentially not a straight line, right?
Yeah, it's not a straight line. It has a lot of ups and downs. So with that being said, I was able to make partner at my prior law firm simply because I started bringing in business. And there wasn't a traditional entertainment practice group at that time. So I was one of the few in the firm that was actually doing entertainment work. And you can only pitch people so much as an associate before they're like, hey, like, who's the partner that's going to be on the work? And I'm like, well, it's me. And thankfully, because of the work I've done at the firm, you know, I was able to make partner in the newly found entertainment group, which was nice. However, a pivot was on the horizon that I wasn't anticipating. I got a knock on the door from Amazon Music. And, you know, at that time, a lot of my practice was focused in TV and film. You know, I did some music work as well, but I didn't realize, another aha moment, I didn't realize how much I liked music. I, like everyone else, enjoys listening to music in the car, enjoy playing it in my house, you know, when I'm just kicking it. But to get an opportunity to work in music at Amazon Music, it wasn't something I was anticipating, nor did I know what it would exactly entail on a day-to-day basis. But when I got the opportunity, it kind of seemed like something I wanted to do, something I wanted to explore. It seemed like, you know, it had a high visibility, high deal values, and just overall like a good opportunity. So I took it. And for the past year and a half, I've been at Amazon Music as a corporate counsel, handling live streaming and VOD for all of Amazon's live streaming and VOD efforts, specifically focused on Rotation, which is our hip hop and R&B group. So I do deals with everyone from, on behalf of Amazon, from Meg Thee Stallion, Lil Wayne, 2 Chainz, Ed Sheeran, you name it. And the cool thing about my job is I've been able to not only like do music, but connect my prior experience with sports and sports related projects. in this. I specifically work on our Thursday Night Football Amazon Music Live concert series, where after the game, after every Thursday Night Football game, there's a concert show, and I'm the legal behind that show. So every week I'm doing a different deal with a different artist so they can perform at Amazon. And it's just been such a cool experience to have, because it's challenged me intellectually to work in high volume, sitting across from very good attorneys on the other side and trying to, you know, represent my client Amazon Music in the best way possible. But because of some of the high visibility of these deals and this, my short time here at Amazon, only been here a year and a half, I was named to Variety's top in-house entertainment attorneys for 2023. Just kind of based on the work I've done over this year for Thursday Night Football, all of the festivals that we do here at Amazon, where we live stream festivals like Primavera, which was like our first European festival that we've live streamed. So I've been able to work on some like really cool deals, get some high visibility, but at the same time, do work that I enjoy. Like it's at a point now, Ashley, that it doesn't feel like work. It just feels like fun. I tell people I get to go to concerts every week. My kids know, like, oh, it's Thursday. Daddy's not coming home. He's going to be at a concert. I wish we could go, but they're too young, of course. I'm at this point in my career, and it took me a long time to get here, of feeling as though I am having fun with what I'm doing. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I get to bring my village and community with me because, like I said, I'm always a hustler. I'm always thinking about what's the next step, but I'm not just doing it for myself. I think about my community. So like, is there opportunities that I can present to guys based on my network, you know, for projects that they're working on? Like I'm always trying to service those in my community, even if I'm not their attorney at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's such a great story. And I think you also said something that was important there too, that it took you a long time to get here. And I think that's important to recognize because there's so many different seasons. And I know that we didn't talk about this, but a stint in consulting. So you did litigation, you've done consulting, then you transitioned to partner and entertainment. Now you're transitioning to corporate counsel. Now you are in a space where you love what you do and it doesn't feel like work, but it took so many different steps. And I'm curious about what you've learned thus far throughout these different steps. Are there any kind of lessons learned that you can share with the audience?
Yeah. One of my biggest advice would be to be patient. That was very hard for me because you think you're doing everything right and you think you're meeting all your deadlines, trying to get towards your goals, and then something happens and it throws you off, right? So in those moments, I had to learn to be patient, that my time was coming, that like, if I keep putting in the work and keep focusing on the day-to-day of getting to my goal, I will get there. So the first thing is to be patient. The second thing I learned is that you have to have grit. I think Ashley and I talk about this with our kids a lot, that like we think the most important skill set that we can teach them is to have grit, because life's going to knock you down. And like I told you, I started off in a single parent household that to most people is considered a disadvantage. I felt as though I had struggles with the bar, I had struggles with the career, but like the one thing that got me through is that I had grit. You're not going to beat me. This is not going to stop me. This is not going to stop me from chasing my goals relentlessly. And then finally, this one is I'm still working on, but I think it's something that's important to, you have to have some form of self-love. And what I mean by that is you have to be gentle with yourself, because society will always make you think you have to get there right now. You have to be there today, that you're not doing enough. You are. And you are the person that will know whether you are or not, right? But like, I think if you can practice some form of self-love and give yourself grace in those moments where, oh man, I should be here, or I should be at this pinnacle in my career or my personal life, like give yourself some care, realize in some grace, realize that you're working, that you're trying, and to keep chasing your goal relentlessly, but not to the detriment of yourself or your mental health.
Yeah. And I think that last point too, not to the detriment of yourself or your mental health, which is so challenging to do. I think we all overwork. We all have stages of burnout. I haven't met someone who has achieved their goals and said, oh, I had all this peace the entire time. And I did all of these, you know, I lived a healthy lifestyle. But it's so good to try to do that. Do you feel like you've been able to kind of achieve your goals and do all these different things in a healthy way? Or did you have challenging times with regard to that?
It was challenging times. I think like it initially, especially when I was making the transition from Delaware to DC to California, that time period, it was difficult. And I really had to teach myself these lessons that I just kind of described earlier and still remind myself to this day. So no, it was definitely challenging, but I really always go back to community. I had a really strong wife who supported me through all of this. Without Ashley, a lot of the support and love that I needed to get through these times, I wouldn't have. So I always come back to like family, village, community, because that support system is what allowed me to get through those challenging times, even when I didn't think I had it in me to keep going. You know, one of the most challenging things that happened to me in my career was my mom got sick. My mom got pretty sick. I want to say like right around the time I was studying for the Delaware bar, which may have contributed to, you know, mentally me being not being there during that test time. And her health struggles were both physical and mental health as well. And it required a lot of my time. And that was very hard for me because it was a change in our relationship. I'm no longer just the son. I'm kind of now becoming the caretaker parent. And that moment was kind of revolutionary for me because it forced me to see outside myself in a way that I hadn't before and to start organizing my life in a way that I could provide for those around me, not only my family and Ashley and the kids, but also my mom. So without community, without love and support, I wouldn't have gotten through that moment either. So it was definitely some challenging times. I think, you know, a lot of the times for me, it was the personal impacting the professional, trying to navigate, making it out my neighborhood, having survivor's remorse about that, getting to a point of not being okay with being successful. I think a lot of people talk about getting to success, but not a lot of people talk about being okay with being successful. And what I mean by that is, especially for us Black and Brown folk, some of us may come from backgrounds that weren't the most advantageous, right? And so when you make it, quote unquote, make it, you can have this guilt of like, man, why me? Why was this opportunity given to me? And I had that. I struggled with it. I would look back home and see my family and realize that I'm having experiences that they may not have. But then I kind of tried to flip that concept in my head and start thinking, well, okay, you're getting this opportunity, but what are you going to do with it? What are you going to show people? It's all well and good. You feel guilty, like you made it out. But like, are you going to do something about it? And I think once I started shifting my mindset to what can I do with my platform, I started incorporating ways of showing people something different, especially back home. So like being able to say like, hey, I'm from here and I did it too. And here's how I did it is just so exhilarating for me to give that to people. It just makes me feel good. And it helps me to like not have that guilt, because now I feel like I'm leading people to the lake. It's their choice if they drink or not, but like I'm leading you there.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much for just kind of opening up more there and sharing some of those personal struggles and everything with your mom too, and how that has impacted your perspective and just the sheer amount of support that you've had from your wife, Ashley. And I think all of that is beautiful. And just even the shifted mindset, taking the guilt and really turning it into purpose. And what you've said, I can't personally relate to that, but you know, my husband says things like that. You know, when you come from a place where you are just doing a lot better than your community, you know, that can be really challenging. And it is, it's that shift, because where you are, you deserve to be where you are. And so it's like, what do I do with this opportunity? And I think that that's really beautiful. And I'm so curious about family life, because you've mentioned being a father, you've mentioned being a husband, and Ashley is someone who has a very successful career as well. And so you guys are juggling and you got the kiddos, and I think that you coach, right? You coach one of their teams. Yeah, tell us about, and I won't use the word balance, but I'll use the word integration. Tell us about work-life integration and that family life.
Yeah, that's a great word, because it's not a balance. It is an integration. Me and Ashley, we met in law school at Howard. We've been together since about 2011. We got married in 2016. And we have two children, two boys, TJ, who's 6, and Carter, who's 4. And the way we look at it is our family comes first, but we do have these aspirations. You know, like you said, Ashley is very accomplished in her own right. She heads the West Coast Business Development for Paul Weiss, which is a major law firm, international law firm. So she's very, very busy. She's actually in New York right now while I do this podcast. But like, because we had the benefit of coming out of school together and literally growing together, we've gotten to see the different iterations of ourselves over the years. And I think from a family standpoint, her and I growing together and continuously choosing each other in these moments. So us growing together and having the opportunity to enjoy each iteration of each other over the years has allowed us to integrate our lives together and not be like bogged down by work and trying to figure out family. Like the kids just are apart. Like we bring our kids to work. We bring our kids to like our work events. So that way they understand like this is possible. Like you can live this life too without us. And we just try to integrate our life in every way. Like Ashley will say, hey, like when I was at the law firm, if she met someone, oh, you should meet my husband. He's a partner at such and such firm. You should work with him, kind of thing. And I will do the same when opportunities come up in music or in entertainment and sports, you know, I'll say, hey, like, let me know if any of the partners from your firm want to come, you know, kind of thing. Like we work off of each other. And that's not just in the family and the house, but also in business too. Ashley is, and my kids are like the focus. They push me. They're the reason I get up each day to keep pushing and going after my dreams and my goals. But like, I really don't feel the need to have a work-life balance, like in the traditional sense, because everything is so integrated. My friends are my business partners. My wife is not only just my wife, but like she's my cheerleader. I'm hers. You know what I mean? So it's just like everything is integrated. The kids, it's so funny. After every concert, the kids take my wristband and they'll wear them to school, kind of thing. Like that's how integrated my work life and my personal life are. And I just try to think of myself as a whole person and not try to like have one life here and one life there. Like, no, it's just one life. And never let the professional dictate the family, because the family is the center. And my story always, it always comes back to the village and the community that was around me to help me get here. And if you neglect that, then everything else falls to the wayside. So Ashley and I, we try to focus on one another, because if we focus on our relationship, then everything from there kind of just spans out and we'll be successful. And if it's not, we can figure it out as a team.
Yeah. Oh, another one. I love that too. And I think that it reminds me of something that my parents told me. I remember I was so curious when I was younger and I asked them, I said, "Do you love me more, Mom, than you love Dad?" And she said, "Listen, it's just different." She said, "Dad and I have to be at our best selves together for us to love you the best way that we can, for us to pour into you." So Dad and I always got to keep this relationship. She said, "First God," but she's like, "Then it's Dad and me. And then we love you," and it all kind of trickles down. And I remember at first feeling a little offended. I was like, "Wait, what? I'm not number one." But it's certainly true. And it's something, you know, my husband and I don't have kids yet, but that is certainly aligned with our values and the way that we move through life. And I think it's very effective. And I love the way that you're able to integrate all the important things in your life.
These concerts keep us young. Ashley and I always laugh, like going to these shows, we're like, are we in a midlife crisis? Because we're like always at a show. Like, but it's been great, because it's like it just allows us to connect in our busy days.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to you, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and you're like, "Yeah, we were just at this concert." I say, "Y'all are young. Like, y'all are just living. And I am not even living like that. So you inspire me to get outside and get to the concerts."
We're trying, man. We're trying.
So just to dig a little bit deeper from a personal perspective and perhaps a self-development perspective, is there something that you struggle with that you've been working on? In addition, it seems like you've overcome a lot of things, which is great, but as humans, I think we are continuing to grow, and you are in this point in life where you have made it arguably made it, like we talked about, and you are successful according to, I think, your own definition, but even society's definition. And so is there something that you are trying to work on personally or something that you struggle with?
Yeah. I have a good friend from law school. His name is Rustin Brown. He works at Davis Polk and he's a great attorney as well. And one of the things that we talk about is like with my story, so much of it came out of survival, that like the need to survive, the need to overcome, the need to get past your current circumstance. I'm no longer operating from that space. I have accomplished some of the things that I wanted to accomplish. So now I think the challenge that I'm working on is to not operate from a place of survival and I have to hustle and I got to make it, but to operate from a place of stability and a place of comfort to continue to pursue the things that I want to pursue. And that has been a struggle simply because like you're not operating with a chip on your shoulder. You can't be I'm not the underdog right now, you know? So like I have to operate from a different place. And ultimately I'm learning that place is love. I always I view myself like, and you may laugh at this. I view myself as like a generator of energy. And it's my job to get that energy into other people. Because as a lawyer, like we're not the ones coming up with the cool idea. We're servicing the idea. We're helping the idea grow. So like I always view myself as a generator of giving that energy to other people. And I think that energy is love. And by giving more love and operating from a place of love, which is also a place of comfort and stability, I am now trying to reshift my mindset to operate from there versus trying to have a chip on my shoulder and be like, I got to make it. I got to do this. I got to survive. Like, no, you're surviving. You're thriving, actually. Now, how do you operate from a place of love to get even more out of that, to get even more creativity, even more opportunities and ideas out of that? So I think my biggest struggle right now is just teaching myself to operate from love and comfort and stability at all times versus the need to survive.
I think that's so beautiful. I love that. So I think I can probably predict perhaps bits and pieces of what you'll answer this question with or how you'll answer this question. Oh, yes. Shout out to Kesmin. She's one of my best friends and she works with Thomas as well. So that's with so many connections between us.
Yeah, this was bound to happen.
But I'm curious about your purpose. Life purpose, career purpose. Talk to us about that.
I think they're all the same. I don't view them as life or personal versus professional. My purpose is to inspire. I think God put me on this earth to show people that difficult things can be done and difficult circumstances can be overcome. One of the things I personally like about my story is that I never quit and that I quote unquote started at the bottom and now have worked my way up. But I think my purpose is to tell this story, especially like everything from my mom to the career struggles to finding success at a young age. You know, I'm only 36. So I think I have to tell that story to inspire others because it's so funny. You never know what people are thinking. You never know what's going on in someone's life truly. And the more I share my story, and I've been sharing my story more over the past few weeks, people just come up to me and say, hey, like, man, I'm going through that too. And like, you know, I'm trying to figure it out. Thanks for sharing it. Because like, I didn't have people share with me some of their ideas and struggles that they're going through and how they overcame them for me to use as an example to get where I'm going. So like, I feel like my greatest life purpose is to inspire and is to inspire others to chase their dream relentlessly. A lot of the work that I do focus on like high school kids and children, because I feel like those are critical ages to start developing that mindset. So if I can inspire one Black boy or Black girl to chase their dream relentlessly, that's it. That's the mission for me.
Yeah. And you're certainly doing that. And I can even just see how your childhood shows up in that mission because of the work that you did with PAL growing up. You also talked about just like sharing your story and the power of storytelling and helping people feel seen. That's exactly how I feel. That's what I think my purpose is in life. And if you have any final thoughts to share with the audience, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. I think my final thought is this, that you have to find your tribe. And what I mean by that is those people in your life that will support you through the ups, the downs, the all arounds, that will be there to lift you up, because no one gets here alone. You can't do it by yourself, whether that's your family, whether that's your spouse, whether that's your close friends. You need people in your corner to support you. And as I think back, and as we're talking about my story right now, I think about all the men and women that helped me get to this point, starting with my mom, starting with the Officer Wileys, starting with the basketball coaches of the world. Like, all those people played a part in shaping who I am. And so I feel as though that's something that's transferable for everyone. You need people around you that can help mold you. You need people around you that can see things that you don't see in yourself. And when you start surrounding yourself with those type of people, success becomes so much easier to obtain. Whatever version of success, depending on how you define it, it becomes that much easier to obtain. And for me, the success was not so much making these lists and being like considered a great lawyer. It was more about proving to myself that like I can do it, that this is possible, like this is something I'm interested in and I can do it. But I couldn't have done it without all those people around me that boosted me up. And I think that's the beauty of my story, that there was a village behind me then and now, that I'm not doing this in a vacuum. And I'm so thankful for those people. And I pray that our listeners find those people for themselves, and that they continue to trust in themselves, trust in their dream, chase that dream relentlessly, and do it in a way that they inspire others in their village and surrounding area to go do the same in their life.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing. Thank you again, Thomas, for coming on No Straight Path. This has been, amazing.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to another episode of No Straight Path, the highs, the lows, and the lessons learned. Remember to share the podcast with friends and family. And my hope is that these stories help you navigate your No Straight Path journey. If this content is adding value to your life, and I hope it is, please take a few minutes out of your day to rate the show and write a review. You can click the link in the show notes to write a review. It helps other listeners find the show, and I just really appreciate it. Have a lovely week, embrace the journey, and remember, you're not alone.